Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome, Ben and everyone else, to the Triple Jump podcast.
We're back.
This is a video game podcast where we talk about video game things that are happening in the video game-o-sphere, as it's called.
Oh boy, do we.
Yeah. It's a big round, pixely round ball, the video game-o-sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is.
And we take submissions for questions and topics by you. If you're a patron. If you're not.
Get
what are you
out.
Doing?
Well, you can listen.
You can listen.
But then get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Ben, how are you today?
I'm all right.
You're all right?
Okay, I've been playing, played a number of games over the weekend.
Whoa, steady. As for what we playing.
I know. I'm saying I'm ready.
The upcoming cutting edge segment.
It's crazy. No one's ever done it before. What about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've not actually been playing much recently because at time of recording, it's not actually that long since the previous podcast.
No.
Sometimes we have our schedule isn't always weekly in terms of recording, but yeah, we've got three questions from you lovely people, and we've got a big discussion, and we've got weird news.
Whoa.
It's all coming up.
It is.
Let's jump straight in with a question from Dave McCade.
Dave McCade?
Dave McCade says, as talk is that the next generation of consoles will be the last for physical game, do you think a loyalty scheme will be introduced as trade-ins will effectively be extinct?
Extinct is what it says. Yeah, that's right, isn't
that's
it?
That's how you spell it.
It is, yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Extinct.
Sorry, I thought I caught you out there, Dave, but I looked the fool, didn't
you,
I?
Oh, you look like a... I mean, there's no question mark. You could have called him out for that.
I could have done. No, yeah. We're big fans of Dave. Dave's our fave.
Yeah.
Fave McCade.
Fave Dade. Dave McFave.
Yeah.
Trade-ins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Who uses them anymore?
Well, yeah. I think certainly like for whatever the current gen is, anytime that's going through. Mm-hmm. I'd say recently. So like this literal current gen, I think it's definitely fallen off slightly in terms of like whether people trade in, whether people buy pre-owned versions. I think there's like still a big market for retro trade-in and, and buying used. I mean, you can't buy those things new anymore, certainly. So I think like the trade-in industry will survive in a kind of retro collector style format, but I mean, you might be right. Like, I think there'll probably be a big old drop off in the market when if games are no longer physical, but it's already going that way as it is. It's like at the moment we have the option of the two, so there's still trade-ins for PS4 and Xbox One going on, and people are supporting that, but I guess it's just if it becomes non-physical, then there's not going to be much trading.
No, we've talked extensively before on the podcast about streaming and digital games and their prominence now compared to, you know, even just a few years ago. And you and I both get a great deal of our games digitally just because of, the industry that we work in.
Mm-hmm.
And PR companies don't send out physical copies of games anymore. I know a lot of people still prefer to have a physical copy of a game.
Yeah.
But increasingly people are buying digital. And when they want to sell their games, it's just notorious how crap it is, how crap trade-ins have always been for trading in stuff. I suppose the concern for me over the trade-in is, what about my physical games that I want to play on my digital-only platform? Like, if there's backwards compatibility, that's more of a pressing issue for me than will I be able to,
sell my games. That's a good point.
But yeah, he does talk about a loyalty scheme. The PSP Go, when that came out, which was Sony's digital-only PSP variant that was like about this big and, well, about the size of your palm, and it slid up and had a little controller thing underneath. And I really liked that console. Mm-hmm. It got a bad rap, and probably rightly so, because in typical Sony fashion, they just didn't really think about it properly or see it through.
Yeah.
But one thing they did promise before launch is that they were looking into a trade-in scheme where whereby if you owned a physical copy of a PSP game, you'd be able to get a digital version for free.
Okay.
To be able to play. But they never, ever followed up on it. And they never introduced it, and then quietly discontinued the PSP Go a little while after.
Yeah, I guess it would be a bit tricky to I don't know how you would implement that. Maybe you would also need like a PS3 or like you stick it in your computer drive, mm-hmm. and then you go onto like the website and say, look, the disc is in, read the disc, check that I own a legit copy, and then like ticks it onto your account or something. But rather than have to physically take your boxes to some Sony shop somewhere.
That's the thing, yeah. Like maybe it has some kind of code in the box and stuff, but then if you buy pre-owned, you can't.
No.
You can't do that, which is just going back to when games had online codes a few years ago on PS3 and Xbox 360 for a bit, which was mad.
Yeah,
you needed an online pass and stuff to access the online content, which was really stupid. I suppose another interesting thing is, as he's suggesting here, in that you, when you buy a game, you won't be able to trade it in anymore if you don't like it. Like once you've bought it, that's it.
True.
And that's only going to, I think, heighten people's sort of unwillingness to pre-order stuff.
Right.
Because they're not going to want to, because it is a gamble at that point.
Yeah.
Like it's always a gamble to pre-order things anyway. But if you really don't like it, then you can either return it physically or sell it.
Mm.
But you won't be able to do that. So people will probably buy fewer games.
That's a good point.
Because they're more expensive anyway on the whole when they're new or they've just come out and they're digital. So I don't know. I don't know how practical an option that says, I don't want to play this game that I bought anymore. I would like to forfeit my digital rights to play it in exchange for £10 of store credit. I don't know how the legality of that or how that would ever work.
Well, they can't
work.
Profit off that off that trade-in anyway, so I don't think they'd be
Nobody
interested.
Nobody wins in that situation.
I guess the other issue is the longevity of... I mean, let's imagine that PS5 is completely non-physical, which I don't think it is going to be, but let's just say that that's what happens.
Right.
What's the longevity then of a PS5 game? So you get a digital download for it and you play it, but what if in 5 or 10 years after that game has come out, you're thinking, oh, I'd really like to play Uncharted 5 again or whatever, and... I mean, I guess a game with as big a label as that probably would be re-released digitally on subsequent platforms. But, you know, some of the smaller games, some of the indie games and things, it basically means that, like, you wouldn't be able to play it anymore because there's going to come a time where they're not either not hosting servers or...
The online service has just been shut down.
Yeah, and you just can't download a physical a digital copy of that anymore. So that's the other problem. I think there's a few problems with complete non-physical. I think it's fine to blend it and say, look, if you never, ever want to have to buy anything physical again, you can do this all through codes now. Some people are probably good with that, but...
Yeah.
And then there's obviously like internet speeds and having to download things. We're getting kind of onto the streaming stuff again now, but yeah.
No, but you're bang on there. Like Sony in particular have been under fire recently because they're increasingly, I think, Drive Club... The game they poured a load of money into from, I think it's Evolution Studios, who have now closed. They did MotorStorm and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They made Drive Club, which, you know, a fundamental part of that game was online servers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a first-party game that they poured money into, and Sony is shutting it down, I think, later this year.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's going to be delisted from the PlayStation Store.
Yeah, so I think it's by 2020.
Gone. But, so it's gone, completely gone. And if companies are going to do this, like you can still go on to, there was a great article on Push Square actually about it, about how, you know, this is kind of embarrassing and not okay.
Yeah.
Because you can go back and play an online match of Halo 1 on Xbox if you want, right? That the servers are still up for that. You can go all the way back and play that if someone else is there.
I know the Halo 2 servers aren't up because there's this story of like how they were going to switch them off at midnight on this day.
Right.
And there were loads of players like hanging around and they kept them going for like another few hours so people could keep playing. So I don't know about Halo 1.
Well, at least Halo 3. Definitely on 360. Yeah. There's still servers there you can go back. But Sony have a habit of just turning these things off. Mm. And when it's a game that has an online function, you know, online functionality, like Demon's Souls, for example... That game, you can still play it through, but it's just like, you've just gutted it. It can't cost that much. Obviously, it costs money to host servers, but like there has to be a focus. If online is the future and digital only is the future, then there has to be safeguards and infrastructure, yeah, to make sure that this stuff stays around for people who want to use it. Because once you bought it, you should have a right to play that for as long as you want.
Especially for games that are like online only as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's going to, again, become an increasing thing. And if, I mean, for example, my one true dream and one true love, Beyond Good and Evil 2, is going to be, at the moment, they're saying it's online only.
Yeah.
And if in 5 or 10 years they shut down those servers, that game is completely unplayable forever, even if you do have a copy of it, you know? So that's a massive shame.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's we've destroyed the notion of non-physical there.
But, yeah. I mean, on the whole, we've spoken before. Like, I pre-ordered Fallout 4 digitally so I could get it immediately at midnight because I could preload it. And there are definite advantages to having digital games, but... You know, games being delisted and stuff shouldn't happen.
No.
It shouldn't happen. I know that there are legal issues with things like Telltale, where the company goes under and it's like, well, who has the rights to this? Do we technically take it down?
Yeah.
How does it work? I don't understand how it works. But knowing that I bought, for example, Tales from the Borderlands digitally, then I've the onus is on me to keep that downloaded on my console and to just hope either I never have to remove it to free up space or my console dies.
Yeah.
Because then it's gone and I can never get, even though I've paid for it, I can never get it back.
That's true.
And that's rubbish.
God, that is crazy when you think about it, that you've just got it on your console and if something happens, it's gone.
Yeah, it's mad. It's kind of mad. So yeah, better infrastructure. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, I think.
Yeah. Talking of how this plays out.
Oh,
that's a link.
Oh my goodness.
It's time for what we're playing. Ben, mouthful of water. You say you've been playing apostrophe things this week.
I have.
Let me just move a bit closer to this microphone.
Oh, where are you going? You're off over there.
I'm here.
Oh,
there we go. Ben,
nice. Yes.
You've been playing. What have you been playing?
I have played all sorts this weekend. Oh, I finally got the last trophy I needed in Fallout 76.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, that was revive a player 20 times, which, because I largely played that game, well, I almost exclusively played that game by myself.
Mm.
I got a friend, finally managed to persuade someone. I got a friend, full stop.
Yeah.
And then I finally managed to persuade them to help me out. Because I don't know many people with this game. And I know even fewer people who are willing to play it.
Right.
So...
But people are probably willing to play it if it means jumping off a cliff 20 times.
Well, that's the thing, right? So I looked up a guide. I mean, it's fairly self-explanatory, but I just wanted to make sure there was... Because, you know, big games like this... There's usually some sort of weird glitch or something that you have to do it a very specific way.
Yeah.
But in so doing, I did discover that what I needed to do was, on top of my existing base, build basically a ladder to the sky.
Right.
Just a load of stairs stacked on top of each other going all the way up to the sky. And my friend just had to run up the stairs and just jump off the top. And I was waiting at the bottom where they would fall down and be so hurt they couldn't get back up without being revived or respawning.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was just able to revive them. And then they'd happily just get up and sprint back off to the stairs, back up the stairs, and then leap off again. And then I was able to revive them. It didn't take very long. And I finally got the platinum trophy. And now I'm probably never going to play it again.
Oh, really? Is it that?
It's that kind of thing where the platinum, I think, was really keeping me going. Where I was like, oh my God, I might actually be able to do this.
Sorry to hear that.
Because they've added loads of interesting stuff. Like there's a survival mode you can play now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge update that they detailed a couple of months ago that's rolling out this year.
Right.
But ultimately, it doesn't matter how much stuff they add to it. If the game is still fundamentally broken... Like from a server standpoint and from an engine standpoint, there's no amount of content they can add to make it any more fun to play.
Yeah.
Because you're still going to face exactly the same issues. You can put a bow on it, but if it's still a stinky poo, then, you know, there's no...
It's a poo with a bow on.
It's a poo with a bow on.
Yeah, no one wants that.
You know, as much fun as I had playing with the poo.
Right.
You know, and there is fun to be had from playing with poo sometimes.
Sometimes. But safely, cleanly, preferably fake poo.
With gloves.
With gloves.
And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was done. I very briefly jumped into Monster Hunter World.
Oh, did you?
Gave that a go, started it up, got hit by about 10, 20 dissertations worth of text boxes explaining how things work. It's... It's a deep boy, I'll say that much. And
all it is just Iguana Killer Simulator 2019, isn't it?
Well, I was always interested in it, and this is absolutely not me judging the game whatsoever, but like for in terms of just wanting to jump into it for an afternoon, I was like, there's way too much to learn right now. I can't do this just yet.
Yeah.
So I did like the first couple of hunts, and then I stopped playing. But this was all while I had my friend over this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So I also played, what was it? I played some more of the Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah.
11 beta.
That's going to be my what we play in.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I jumped into that and. Well, I played one match and I got my ass kicked the first round.
Right.
And then somehow I managed to pull it back the second round. And then the third round, I pulled off this surprise victory against someone who was clearly way better than me.
But you just fluked it.
I fluked it.
Yeah.
And then I, when I had to do a fatality, I just did the spam crouch thing again, where you just sort of bob up and down. And then I just poked him with just gave him a little
one jab,
little boop. And then he fell over. And I was like, haha, well, I can retire now. I'm happy with that. I can get rid of that.
It's arguably more offensive than a fatality.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I'm glad I have messages turned off. And then I was like, okay, I'm done. And I tried to quit and I accidentally clicked rematch. And he was like, okay, here we go.
Oh my God.
I just quit the game. I just closed it. That was pretty much it for me. Watched a little bit of Devil May Cry 5 being played, and that game is mental.
Mm-hmm.
And also played a fair bit of FIFA, actually.
Oh.
On, I think, the difficulty below world class, which I think is professional.
Yeah.
And we were playing as a crap team in the Champions League against another crap team. But for some reason, on that difficulty, and he's played a lot of this game, and he seemed to think that there was... Maybe it had been patched, or it was certainly different from the last time he played it, because...
Right.
Their defense and goalkeeping was unreal. Like, these crap teams, they were pulling off these incredible saves. There were always four people at the back all the time. Whenever we got a break on goal, our team was so bad that whenever we took a shot, it would just...
Hit three men.
It would either hit a man or it would be basically a pass to the goalkeeper.
Right.
Or it would fly off in the wrong direction. When we were shooing on goal, it would always hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
It was like we were cursed, like we just couldn't win.
But professional, I mean, I'm not a FIFA player, but professional sounds like it's a reasonably high level of difficulty.
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That sounds right to me, but it's not supposed to be like that?
I think...
If it's a crap team you're against.
Well, exactly. Like, we weren't playing badly, but it seems that the game just decided, like, well... You know, it's on a higher difficulty, so you're not allowed to score. There are so many points when I play FIFA, which isn't very often, that it feels like there's some kind of FIFA god who just decides, not today.
It's just a roll of the dice, isn't it?
Exactly. Rather than it being down to skill sometimes, you do everything right, and then it just goes, this slow, stocky defender... He's going to catch up to your really fast striker, like, with ease. And then your player's going to slow down so he can catch you.
Yeah.
And then the goalkeeper's going to just pull off this obscene save.
Backflip.
Yeah. So it is a roll of the dice. But that's me. That's what I've been playing. What about you?
Yeah. So we've been playing a little bit of the Mortal Kombat beta.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about it. My concern is that I don't know if the fatalities seem... I'm really torn about this.
Yeah.
So Mortal Kombat's never taken itself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It's always enjoyed being very, very gory and violent and doing silly things like, you know, something that should definitely not have impaled a person does impale a person.
Yes.
It's sharp and moving fast enough, apparently, that it does.
Everyone's made out of very, just sort of gelatin.
Just gelatin, yeah.
Just with
enough structure that they can walk around and fight.
Yeah.
But not enough that they can hold anything off.
No.
But it kind of feels like... like a parody action movie rather than a cheesy action movie. Well, there's a subtle difference, if you see what I mean.
You mean it's so over the top?
Yeah.
That it almost...
It kind of feels like they're taking the piss almost out of themselves at this point.
Right, okay.
I don't know. It might be just partly because I had a bit of a bitter taste because I'm really bad at Mortal Kombat.
We got paired up with someone who was just just cheesing their way through the fight.
Yeah, and there are, because there's other fighting game franchises that I'm reasonably good at. So Tekken and Soul Calibur I've played a lot of, but they just have different control schemes, and I have no idea what I'm doing in Mortal Kombat, and therefore I'm terrible. But maybe I'm just a bit bummed out that, like, when someone, because normally a fatality is probably happening on me rather than me on them.
Right.
And so there's less satisfaction that, oh yeah, I'm doing something really great to this person. They, oh yeah, I'm just sort of like watching this as my own head is removed, thinking,
yeah.
Well, that's a bit silly, really.
Mm. Never ever done a fatality ever. I'm not good at fighting games. I've never really played Mortal Kombat. I played through the story of Injustice 1,
right?
Which was hard enough for me.
That had heroic brutalities, didn't it? Or was that Injustice 2?
I think they both had. Oh, I don't know if they had,
because they were non-fatal. That's the point. They couldn't be fatalities.
Yeah, I don't know if there was. I don't know if there were fatalities in Injustice 1 or whatever the equivalent was. You certainly had special moves that you could trigger when you filled your bar all the way up that would take off a lot of health, and they'd be unique to each person, like taking as Superman flying someone out into orbit and then punching them back to Earth and stuff. But they were fine. You know, Batman was fine. Yeah. Afterwards, he was just tired.
He's been to space, but that's right. He held his breath, I think.
Exactly.
He shut his eyes.
Yeah, I'm really bad at fighting games, and it looks gorgeous. Like, Mortal Kombat 11 looks amazing. And
it does.
It, I'm assuming, plays very well, but I have
it
no
plays,
idea.
Like, smoothly.
I just smash buttons.
Yeah, it's, and I like all the sort of arena-based tricks that you can do, like slamming people's heads into this actual table.
Yeah.
Or, you know, car bonnets and things like that. And it'll be really good to see, like, when all the maps come out and all that, when the game comes out, basically, seeing all the characters and their fatalities and things.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I guess it doesn't help that I'm just not really a fan of the series as much as I am of others.
Right.
So maybe I'm not best placed to analyze it objectively and say, oh yeah, this is better or worse than it has been previously. I'd be interested to know what the audience think. If you guys have been playing the beta of Mortal Kombat 11, then let us know how you think it stacks up, especially if you're a long-time MK fan.
Yeah, I think they're called K-fans with a K.
Oh, yeah.
Everything begins with a K. Fans.
Yeah, it does.
And if you'd like to see our K-stream, it's Con Klein Knau. So you can go and watch that. Us getting very annoyed for about half an hour.
Yeah.
Pulling off a fluke victory. I think we ended up going like 2-8 in the end.
Oh,
for victories to losses.
It was real bad.
It wasn't great.
Some people were being cheap as hell, and that was frustrating. Yeah, but
just
some people were just
throwing projectiles and poking us from a distance, and then they learned how to teleport, and then that was all
that
over.
That was it. It was game over at that point.
Yeah, I didn't even know how to block for the longest time.
Yeah.
So that was also an issue, because I was holding back
to
block.
On the back foot. Yeah, that's
rubbish.
Not how it works in that game. That's what I'm talking about. There's all these things that I'm doing, like pressing two buttons together. Like, this is a throw. Oh, wait, no, it's not. No, absolutely not.
That's not how it works.
So, I might give it a go there when it comes out in full and just try and get good, and then maybe I'll like it more.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be good at a fighting game, but it's just the kind of, it's so, by its very nature, it's so competitive that you could put in, you have to practice like an instrument.
Most of them have a practice mode now. Well, they have them for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to practice like an instrument, and I feel like I'd rather learn an instrument, and I can't be asked to do that.
No,
so
I can't.
It's not for me. And also, if I put in loads of time and then I just got absolutely destroyed by someone, I'd feel like I've just wasted my time. I'm not the kind of person who enjoys Battle Royale games for the sake of enjoying them, because I feel like with Battle Royale games, I can't truly have fun with a Battle Royale game unless I win.
Yeah.
There's no real participation medal for Battle Royale games.
Right.
And it's the same with fighting games. It's not really a participation medal. You lose.
Mm.
You either win or you lose.
Yeah, whereas Rocket League, it doesn't matter if you lose, because you're having a fun time just
scoring
some screamers.
Score some goals. Oh my God. Or just, you know, farming for items.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, just sitting there
in circles.
Yeah, with a bot that holds the accelerator down.
God. I played a little bit more Sekiro.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's so bloody hard. I defeated a couple more bosses, did a little bit more exploring, and then I just, like, I think I need regular breaks from this game, because I feel like I take two steps forwards and then I take a step back.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I need some time away from it before I throw myself back
into
it.
Have you run into the Snake a bit more? Severus Snake?
No more Severus Snake. Oh. Got past the Severus Snake. Met a big man on a horse who swings this blade round and round.
Okay.
Took him down.
Sounds fun.
Proceeded through the next area and spotted the the lovely little flower area off in the distance that was the bit where you got your hand cut off at the start of the game.
Oh,
I thought,
lovely.
Oh, well, I'll push round to that because I'm sure there'll be something there. My hand might still be there. And also, I think, you know, I heard you can go back to the beginning of the game where you start off and there's new stuff and things. So I was like, okay, well, I'll push round to there after clearing out this area. Walked through, and then this massive bull, which instead of horns, it's got like a huge bamboo stick with lava and fire coming out of either side of it.
Okay.
Just came careening through the wall and hurt me very hard.
I would have thought that bamboo sticks are flammable, but that's absolutely. Not worry about.
Bulls are flammable. I'm just trying to use the best comparison I can. It was like a big wooden tube filled with flames and anger.
Yeah.
And so at that point I was like, okay, right, I think it's time to just take a little
have a
little break from that game for a little while.
Oh, that's okay. Just go and play some MK. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
The other game that we're good at.
Just go and die in that one instead.
Yeah. I've got another question, Ben.
Yeah.
It's from Mike Bell.
Oh.
Do you want to read it?
Yes, I will read it.
Yeah, go for it.
Mike Bell, the wonderful patron, asks, or says, I suppose, I know Ben collects Game Boys and Peter has a massive PS1 collection, but where do you guys stand on the retro gaming market right now? Do you think that pricing is way out of control for rarer games, some reaching thousands of pounds? Do you think this could put off some newer gamers from starting a collection? So, first off, I suppose we should talk about our respective collections.
Collectathons,
that we have. I have now, finally, collected all of the Game Boys that I physically can that were released in the UK. So I have one of each of the colors. I have the special Pikachu one, and I have the special sort of see-through purpley colored one.
That's the one that I had as a kid.
Well, there you go. And I've got them all in a not new, obviously, that would be insane, but like I've got them boxed and out on display, and I've also got all of the Pokemon games that were released for either Game Boy or Game Boy Color boxed as well. So that includes the trading card game for Game Boy and, you know, red, blue, yellow, silver, gold, crystal. And all of the Game Boy and Game Boy Color accessories that were officially licensed by Nintendo. Ooh. So you could get, and you probably saw them, you know, on lists of ridiculous accessories for Game Boys, like this huge bulky thing that you could slide your Game Boy into, and it had like a magnifying screen and a light and all the sort of stuff. But that wasn't officially licensed by Nintendo.
I had one of those. Someone got it.
Did
for
you?
Me. Yeah, I think a well-meaning aunt or something
to turn you a well-meaning aunt.
Aunt, yeah,
just sort of waddled over.
Well,
with
it's Tiny Peter, isn't it? I can't expect presents from normal-sized people. They'd crush me.
Your aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have that, but I do have all the ones that actually have Nintendo written on them and were officially licensed. All in a nice little display cabinet now.
That's very nice.
You know, the link cable and stuff like that, and an original game, like Tetris edition Game Boy, like original Game Boy, big grey one. So that's been a long time coming, collecting that, and I'm done for now.
A collection is never complete, Ben. We all know this.
Well, technically, no, it's not, especially this one, because I've looked it up online and there are a couple of other very, very rare Game Boys that were released in the UK. Like, there was a limited run that was an invitation to some kind of business event.
Right.
So there was, I think it was in the UK, I believe so, like some kind of business that had limited edition Game Boys sent out as invitations, and they had a cartridge that instead of being a game, when you put it in and turned it on, it played just sort of a very crude wireframe animation that showed the company logo and was an invitation to some kind of party.
God, that's crazy.
Yeah, and like there's footage of the cartridge running.
Yeah.
But I don't know I can't find anywhere online what the Game Boy looks like.
Oh,
I can't
really
find what the cartridge looks like. Nobody seems to be selling it. Hmm. There's probably only like people who got them had no idea what they were, probably.
Yeah.
And the ones that are around are probably under lock and key somewhere, very safe. So I've got everything that I can have, and I bought myself an IKEA display cabinet finally at the start of the year, like a glass one, and people have been seeing on social media and stuff. I've been posting photos of these Game Boys as I've been getting them.
Yeah.
I had most of the Game Boys anyway, but I then had to sort of rebuy them to get them boxed, which was kind of annoying, so it took a while because it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopefully slowly going to start revealing like the full thing if I can.
Oh, you mean on photos on social media?
Yeah, like the full display cabinet.
Goodness me, it's very pretty.
Oh, thank you.
They should all be excited to see it.
But Peter, tell me about your PlayStation collection.
My PlayStation collection. I'm not trying to catch them all, as it were. There is too many to do that.
Oh no.
Especially given that I have a reasonable number of PS2 games as well, and that's the console that's had the most games, like officially, like published on it ever.
Right.
So I'm not by any means trying to get them all, but I certainly wanted to basically rebuy every game I've ever owned on those platforms. And there's some that I still have from like way back when I was a kid. Like I've got a copy of Tekken 1 that I was given in about 1998 or something.
Right.
I think. I don't know when it came out, but like early days. Mm. And in fact, the box is like slightly smaller than all the other boxes because they must have slightly changed the design of the jewel case.
That's interesting.
But like that and a few others are platinums, like silver label.
Oh, no.
And I want to like rebuy all the platinum ones that I've got so that I've got black label copies. Mm. I've got a really weird platinum Tomb Raider where normally a platinum game has a silver spine with black text, I think.
Okay.
And all the black labels are black color with white text. But right. this one platinum Tomb Raider is a silver spine with white text.
Wow.
Which is not what it should be. And I don't know
if weird.
That's just a weird misprint that happened with all platinum copies of Tomb Raider 1 or what. But, you know, that's weird.
That is bizarre.
But yeah, that's what I collect. I've posted photos of my, like, weird sort of the way I've stacked it under a glass coffee table with, like...
I saw it yesterday.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. With my favourite box arts pointing upwards. I've got a copy of Bubsy, actually. That's on there.
Oh, yeah. I bought a copy of that as well.
Yeah.
Just because I saw it in CEX once and I thought, we should probably play this on Worst Games Ever.
Yeah.
And then somebody sent us one last year.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. That's true. That's nice.
Yeah. We did play it, didn't we?
We did.
Played it live.
Yeah, on the Jingle Jam.
So, yeah, that's what I collect. I don't buy accessories and things like that. I occasionally like buy other things that are related to specific games that I really enjoy. Like I bought this centerfold poster for The Unholy War on PS1, which is like a niche game that I'm a big fan of. Yeah. And like I'll do that. I bid on a promo copy of like a press copy of Beyond Good and Evil as well PS2, which there's nothing special. It's just a press copy. But I just thought I'd like to have different versions of this.
Absolutely.
But other than that, yeah, I just collect games that I like. To get to the question,
yes,
do we think that the pricing is way out of control for rarer games? I mean, you say yourself, you know, like that Game Boy, the press one. I can understand why it's expensive, but like, yeah, you will probably never be able to buy one of those ever.
No, not only will it probably never go on sale.
Well, no.
But if it does, I'll likely not hear about it.
No.
And it'll be sold for a disgusting amount of money, I'd have thought, as well. I suppose the real crux of this is not... It's unlikely that someone that's, for example, our age, so mid-20s, is going to suddenly decide, I want to buy up all of my childhood now.
Yeah.
Because it feels like that would be something that they would have either started a collection of by holding on to stuff that they had from their youth.
Exactly.
In terms of what does it say in the question? Do you think this could put off some newer gamers from starting a collection? Mm. Their version of nostalgia and collecting is going to be totally different from ours.
That's literally what my answer was going to be.
They're going to be buying up PS3 things. They're going to be buying up PS4 things. They're going to be buying up like the...
Pop.
The special edition, the Pop Funkos, the special edition, what was it? The DualShock controller that was bundled, that was in like a Fortnite, special Fortnite box.
Right.
There was nothing special about the controller, but Sony just marketed it as a Fortnite controller and it had some in-game code for Fortnite. Like that's the kind of thing that newer gamers, quote unquote, are going to be collecting. And it's not something that we're going to be remotely interested in. So each generation of collectors creates their own market.
Yeah.
And certain things are always going to be obscenely expensive, but that's why you go to, at least for us, that's why you go to charity shops. That's why you snoop around on eBay for people who just have no idea what they're selling.
What they've got, yeah.
And there will, this, it's just the nature of collecting, isn't it? Unless you're collecting DS styluses.
Yeah.
That nobody else wants, there's always going to be competition.
That's the thing. That's why I specified that, like, I'm not just collecting games that I like. I'm collecting games from my childhood because my desire to collect PS1 and PS2 games is based almost entirely from nostalgia. And as a result, I don't think newer games are going to be, you know, going in on copies of Tombi 1 that cost like £200.
Yeah.
Or I've seen some, when I went to Glitch in, that's in Newcastle, isn't it? Yeah. It's weird. I've moved around so much, I didn't know where I was.
Yeah.
When I went to Glitch, there were...
Was it Glitch?
It was not Glitch. It was the NERG.
NERG, yeah. Yeah,
Northeast Retro Gaming.
Glitch
convention.
Never happened.
Glitch didn't happen, that's the point. That's why I guess why I was confused. When I went to NERG in Newcastle, there were loads of gaming vendors that were selling, you know, on display, on the actual table, they've got all these PS1, PS2, N64 games. Mm. And then at the back behind them, there's like occasional like PlayStation 2 games from Japan that there's like only 1,000 copies of them left in the world, or like just ridiculous stuff that the price labels on them, like £500 and stuff like that. It's just insane. And I'm just glad that I never played any of those, and therefore I don't. Right. I'm not hankering to buy one.
You put no sort of price on those.
No,
no special treatment.
But yeah, that's how it works. I don't think it's much of a problem for like newer gamers wanting to start a collection. I'm sure there'll be like one or two people who think, "Oh, I didn't play the N64, but I would really like to start collecting
it."
But
exactly what I was going to say. Like, don't get me wrong. If I saw a boxed special Pikachu edition Nintendo 64 for like £30 at a charity shop because they had no idea what they had, I would buy that immediately, even though I didn't have one of those. Mm. I played on one because my cousin had one, and he got rid of it. So that's been really annoying. I've asked him numerous times over the years, "Do you have it? Is it somewhere? Is it in a cupboard though? Maybe."
Yeah.
But you know. If I saw something that I thought might be valuable, I would buy it.
Right.
Or something that looked cool, I would buy it. But people are gonna buy what means the most to them.
Mm. Yeah.
And they'll dictate that market and the prices.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think like the rarity of these games means that like they're probably not objectively overpriced. I think like the reason that you know copies of some obscure game are hundreds of pounds is because there just aren't that many and lots of people want them, and that's how economy works.
It is.
So that
sure is.
That's the way it goes, unfortunately.
But, yeah.
Ready for some weird...
Oh boy, am I.
Weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Smells weird.
It does.
Here.
It smells really weird.
Mm.
It's a very weird smell.
Oh, there's the source of that smell right
there.
It's
my weird phone smell.
Yeah.
Let me pull up a link to a weird news.
Oh.
It's not that weird. I think we both discovered that this week it's been a slightly unweird week.
Yeah.
At time of recording. I mean, I'm sure tomorrow, you know,
there'll be 10 stories.
Sony are going to change their name to Brony. And that's pretty weird news. But
it is. That's a little odd.
At present, not much is going on, but hoax falsely claimed Epic stole a DeviantArt character design for Fortnite. Do you want me to say that again in plain English?
Okay, yeah.
A hoax
is
falsely claiming that Epic Games stole a DeviantArt character design and used it in Fortnite.
So when you say a hoax, is that the name of, is that someone's username, or no, are you genuinely saying it's a hoax?
There's a hoax going round that this has happened.
Okay, tell me more.
So this is according to Kotaku. It's Laura Dale. Thank you, Laura.
Mm-hmm.
It was posted on the 1st of April, but it's not an April Fool's.
Okay.
Over the past couple of days, accusations have been swirling around the internet claiming that Fortnite developer and publisher Epic stole the design for a skin in its Battle Royale game from a fan artist and their original character design. Okay?
Right.
So, basically, the idea is that... Oh, well, it says right here, back in November 2018, the Taro Protector of the Wilds skin was added to Fortnite. That means nothing to me, but that's apparently what happened in November. It was a relatively unremarkable skin with cool horns coming out of its head, and nothing really happened at the time.
Okay.
That's according to Kotaku.
Yep.
However, over the weekend, allegations emerged of plagiarism from DeviantArt user Elacast. At a glance, it seemed like a clear-cut case. Elacast posted an image of their DeviantArt with a drawing that looks exactly like this skin.
Right.
That had been posted on DeviantArt 2 months prior. So it's like, this existed before Fortnite even published their design, so surely there's something weird going on here.
Weird.
And it was impossible to deny how similar the designs looked. However, in the days since, people with a knowledge of how DeviantArt works, who should be ashamed of themselves, quite frankly, no one should know how DeviantArt works.
It's a mystery.
We should all be baffled at this, and we should be believing this story.
Right.
People know how DeviantArt works, apparently. They've been doing some digging. Apparently, you can update an image that you've uploaded onto your DeviantArt without changing its listed publication date.
Oh, wow.
So you can literally just change an image, it'll still have the same URL. I think it probably
That's
still has
insane.
Like comments and things underneath it saying, wow, I love this.
Imagine if you were able to do that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Just take down a video that's got 20... Take down Gangnam Style and uploaded a speech from Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, and just loads of people going, lol, this is hilarious.
Oh, remember 2011?
Me and my grandma reenact this in my kitchen, you know?
Oh no!
So that seems to be what has happened. This cheeky Elacast, at DeviantArt has edited an old photo, an old image, and just drawn a skin that had already been out.
Naughty!
And it looks like it was uploaded months prior.
Yeah.
Based on looking at older versions of the page, user PyroZombie spotted that the image was originally nothing like the Fortnite skin. So they used a Google Cache and they could see the previous image was just not related whatsoever. So someone's just changed an image. It appears they have gone back, tried to create evidence of plagiarism that never happened. The user who originally accused Epic of plagiarism has since deleted their Twitter account where the claim was made. I mean that.
Imagine trying to pull a fast one.
Yeah. On Epic Games.
But why though? Because it's as you said, not many people truly understand how DeviantArt works.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can do that means that people know that you can do that.
Exactly.
And it must be traceable.
Yeah.
So, why?
Yeah, unless you've found a brand new exploit, you know, in DeviantArt, there's just no point trying to use
silly
workarounds like that. And then embedded in this article, there is a tweet from Ding Dong.
Sure.
At Ding Dong VG that just sort of shows the cache. So, hello? Down below, that's the image that originally was used, and then they just replaced it with that. So this is a screenshot of like the same page
going across
the image. So it used to look like that, and then it looks like
that.
And
then they just changed it. Oh, yeah, because you can just look at a cached version, can't you?
Yeah.
So
that means nothing to people who are either listening on audio or even watching the video because you can't see it. But we will include the link to the article in the video description and so on.
Basically, all you need to know is that You can easily go and look at the website from a certain date and see that just the lineup of photos has just changed.
Yeah.
Just one has been swatched to another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's that. So I know what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to post a really touching image somewhere on DeviantArt.
Yeah.
And wait for loads of people to say, oh, that's so cute.
That's nice.
And then just replace it with like a really graphic McNuggies kind of... terrible, terrible thing.
Grimace's gaping nugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Peter, I've got some weird news for you.
How weird is it?
It's not that weird, but I thought it was funny, so we're gonna talk about it.
Yeah, we should call it funny or weird news.
Funny / weird news. It's not always weird, but sometimes it could be interesting.
Slightly unconventional news.
just
not,
that.
Not every outlet is reporting.
That's the whole headline.
Yeah.
That's what we're calling it. Mm-hmm. So this is also from Kotaku. They have a tendency to post interesting stories, and it's an easy website to browse rather than everything being shuffled around all over the place.
Yeah, thanks, Kotaku. You're doing the Lord's work.
Alex Walker brings us this, and it's titled, A Fallout 76 Player Posted Mr. Robert Pins to Todd Howard. Fallout 76's launch last year was fascinating for all sorts of reasons, and while the developers received all sorts of feedback, one fan expressed their feelings about Robert Pins, in a rather creative way. At the game's launch, one of Fallout 76's biggest problems was weight. Characters could only carry so much, and with limited stash sizes, the weight of every little item became a massive deal. One hairpin that weighs 0.1 pounds might not seem a big deal by itself, but when you're carrying 100 or 200 lockpicks, then suddenly your lockpicks are more of an encumbrance than your actual armor.
Oh my God, they weigh like 20 units.
20 space units.
Yeah.
20 weight boys. Mm. Robert pins are something that Fallout 76 has patched and repatched since launch, and around the time of the game's launch, when the player's base was at its largest and crankiest, one fan had a very passive-aggressive way of making their point. Scrolling past.
I like where this is
going. Auto-playing videos. Here we go.
Hold this box, Todd. This contains 200. Can you hold it? Good.
Well then. Some people send letters. Some of those are very creative, executive director Todd Howard said at the Bethesda Game Day's Fallout 76 panel. I got a box of bobby pins the other week that said, weigh these. Whoever said that, that was the most creative letter I got, Howard explained. So there we go. I thought that was quite nice and quite fun.
Yeah.
Someone just sent him a box of hairpins saying, weigh these.
Yeah, my character can't carry 150 bobby pins. This is a box of 200. Are you capable of lifting this off the floor?
Yes.
Yes.
It's really light.
It really just doesn't weigh anything.
This is stupid. It's the same with ammo. I know ammo obviously weighs a lot more depending on what it is.
Yeah.
But ammo has weight in Fallout 76, unlike the other Fallout games, unless you're playing in sort of special survival mode. And that just cripples what you're able to do.
Yeah, it's a funny thing.
I carried around, like, I prioritized carrying around, as many weapons as I could to begin with, just like a melee weapon, a pistol, a shotgun, a sniper. And then as I went through, I was like, right, I need a melee weapon and a sidearm.
Right.
And basically, that's all I can afford.
Yeah.
Because they have planned accordingly. Like, there are perks that lower the weight of the junk you're carrying, that lower the weight of the chems and the medicine that you're carrying and stuff. But inevitably, you're having to make far more decisions about what you're taking with you and what you can afford to take with you than you are actually about playing the game properly. You're just always thinking, oh, I can only carry 5 bottles of purified water instead of the 20 that I have. And this is stupid because then I have to put it in a chest.
Yeah.
And then the chest is full as well. So
I always do. I certainly want to play Skyrim. I'm like, oh, got to drop all this stuff. I'm only carrying it because I want to sell it to, like, my fence at the Thieves Guild or whatever. And you not only do you then have to, like, decide what weighs too much. It's like, what weighs too much compared to how much I'll get for it? Like, how much gold? And so you might not want to drop, like, the giant steel Warhammer because you're better off just dropping all the silver plates that you picked up. Just things like that, you know? But
it's difficult, but that's fun. That was a fun one there.
Yeah, I like that. A box of Robert, Sir Robert Pins.
Sir Robert Pins.
Sir Robert of Pin, Pinland.
And that's our weird news.
It is. We can move straight on to a question from Robert Pins. No, it's from Robert
He's
James.
He's here. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is...
Robert Jims.
Robert Jims. Absolutely. Very good. So this is something that you kind of touched on earlier. What game genres or type of game do you boys like the least?
Least.
It says in capital letters. Mm. Was it a game that turned you off, like a specific game that turned you off that genre?
Right.
And what would it take to get you back to playing said genre or game type? Now, you said earlier, you're not big into your fighting games. You also don't have super lots of mega happy fun at your battle royales unless you're winning.
No, like, the thing is, I don't have a direct issue with either of those genres because I think they're, you know, and I don't have an issue, like, generally with, like, I don't think any genres shouldn't exist.
No, I don't.
But in terms of liking things the least, I've had a lot of fun with Battle Royale games, and I've also had a lot of fun with fighting games, albeit just messing around with a friend. But it's not something that I would certainly less fighting games than battle royales, but like
fewer.
Sure does. But I would probably rather play battle royale games. Definitely, sorry, better, you know, cuz I know that I can play those at least.
Yeah.
Even though I might find it frustrating, I can at least play those. Whereas fighting games, I'm just useless.
Just a mash.
I have two genres that just don't work for me.
So do I. I think we share at least one of them, but please go on.
Well, MOBA is one of them.
MOBA is one of them.
Yeah, so we made what's it called? April Fool's List.
Oh, yeah.
About League of Legends, and we called it League and Legends. Mm. Nobody watched it, and that's fine, because we were kind of hoping that the 100 million player base of League of Legends might sort of click on it and think, hang on, what?
Yeah, they might be really cross that we called it League and Legends.
And then, you know, have a bit of fun with it. But no, apparently not. But the research for that list was really hard,
yeah,
because neither of us know anything about League of Legends, esports, MOBAs, anything like that.
Well, I'll tell you what. To answer part of this question, one of the reasons I don't like MOBAs is because I did actually play a little bit of League of Legends with friends who are much more into their MOBAs, and they're good at them. They know what they're doing, and like, fair play to them. I hope they continue to enjoy them. Yeah. I think it was League of Legends. But my issue, part of the issue, apart from the fact that they're really hard to just get into because there's so much like micromanagement in terms of just, oh, do I wear these boots or do I wear this amulet? And like, that gives me plus 3.1% speed, but minus 2.9% damage.
Right.
Just all that kind of stuff. But on top of that, certainly League of Legends, and I'm told most other MOBAs, have dreadful communities. Like,
that's
really
true.
Horrible,
it's very
horrible
toxic.
People.
Yeah.
Just, they hate you. If you're a new player and you're not good at the game yet, you're just going to get absolutely wailed on as a general rule by the players, you know, who you're in a match with, which is not something that you see in a lot of other like genres. I think some people can be quite supportive in like
MMOs
and FPS sometimes, and sometimes FPS people.
Yeah, just mute microphones mainly. That's
yeah,
the...
but sometimes people I think are quite nice on FPS at times. And,
No, MOBAs just don't do it for me. I've tried a couple. Like, honestly, I've never actually played League of Legends, but it's exactly the kind of game that I would need to dedicate a lot of time to. And it's just, I've never had a PC to play games on.
Right.
It's never really been anything I've been interested in. I had a go at the Lord of the Rings MOBA that released on PS3, like something Middle Earth. I don't know. It was rubbish. And it's just, I don't like that. The other one that I don't like is hero shooters.
Oh, don't
so
you?
So Overwatch doesn't do anything for me at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks amazing. I think the problem I have with these games, and this goes for MOBAs as well, in particular League of Legends, as I discovered from researching the list, is that they have these incredible cinematic sort of videos, that make it look like a movie. And then, you know, there's no way on earth that the game could possibly A, live up to that, and B, sort of support that level of character development. And, you know, because fans of the game that already exist, for them, it must be incredible. Mm. Like, they see these videos like, oh my God, it's the guy that I play as.
Yeah, that would be great.
Doing a cool thing and looking awesome with all the other people and stuff. But then, you know, you go into League of Legends and you're just, I don't want to like talk down League of Legends because I know how popular it is. I know how much money it makes and I know how good people are at it.
Right.
But, you know, you're not doing the stuff they're doing in the cinematic trailers.
It's not
you're
really not, got a you're narrative not either. I'm no, sure there's it no... does if you read into it and you're a big fan and you're on
but
the
yeah,
wiki.
It's a multiplayer game. Yeah. There's no real narrative. And I get that it's world building, especially I feel like it's more acceptable, I feel, with Overwatch. It makes more sense because these characters are colourful and fantastical and they quip and, you know, there's this universe that they've tried to create that this game takes place in. But... yeah, for me, it's like it just can't translate. I'd rather play a game that has a hype trailer that actually the game can follow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion on hero shooters. I never play them, but I think it's just because I don't know. I think there's just
I'm just
so
not
much
a big multiplayer fan.
Yeah,
about you.
I'm not particularly a big multiplayer fan. I play Battlefront because I enjoy Star Wars, but if it wasn't Star Wars themed, I would not be playing that. Like, I don't play Battlefield, which is a very similar game, actually, in many ways. I guess the only other genre that... I never play FIFA. I don't really play sports games very much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, that's just... I think it's just because I'm not that into football. I don't really watch the tennis when Wimbledon's on, and it just doesn't kind of interest me to sit down and play those in a simulated version.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the only other thing that I don't play much of, but it's not necessarily something I don't like, is MMOs.
Okay.
And I guess kind of for similar reasons as what you were saying with MOBAs and hero shooters, is that, like, in some ways they don't have a very good narrative development. There's like things going on, but because there's rarely any cutscenes and there's not even like kind of scripted moments where your in-game, in-engine character suddenly starts like doing an action with other people. I just feel like most things are progressed through like text boxes. You know, some of these games don't even have like a lot of voice acting because there's just too many characters and quest givers to like apply voice acting to. So it's all just like text boxes. And you know, I appreciate they do have overarching narratives, especially if you read all the supplementary material and you go on the wiki and you really keep up with all the latest updates and things like that. But I think they just seem like they require a lot of commitment. I think it's also not very immersive when you can just see crowds of people zigzagging between like quest givers and talking to them, and you've got just like a man in the street who's surrounded by an arc of like 12 players who are all talking to him for the same reason at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, I like to have an immersive narrative experience as a general rule. And for that reason, I don't actually think MMOs really scratch that itch for me.
Yeah, I get that. I don't play MMOs. I played a lot of RuneScape.
Yeah.
And when my friend had World of Warcraft, I used to go around to his house and play it.
I've never
on his computer
touched World of Warcraft
really
in my entire life.
I loved the idea of Warcraft, but again, you know, I never played games on PC, never had a PC good enough to play games. And then as I, you know, got to a place where I could actually afford it, I just made the decision to play console games instead.
I played a lot of Warcraft 3, like the RTS version.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that had a trailer in it that was like one of those super cinematic, amazingly beautiful like CG trailers for this game called World of Warcraft. I didn't even know at the time it was going to be an MMO. And yeah, it was just a massive letdown because it looked like it was going to be awesome, and then this game came out. I was like, oh, okay, never mind. But yeah, those are some genres, but I don't think there's anything that we really hate.
No, there's no game that I, you know, that I would look at and just go, ugh. But no. I we know what we like, we know what we don't like.
Yeah, there's only so many hours in the day to play games. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Time for a big old, giant, big old, big discussion.
A huge discussion.
Yeah.
This week's discussion, Peter, comes from patron Victoria Maccioni? Maccioni? What do you think? One C.
Maccioni. Maccioni.
Could be Maccioni.
Who's, I don't know.
Victoria M.
Victoria.
Asks, why is VR still a fad when there aren't any good games and it makes everyone sick?
Makes me sick, I have to say, sometimes.
Is an interesting one.
Mm.
Because we are a good few years now into sort of the revival of VR, the resurgence, if you will, because they've tried. Games companies have tried before.
Yeah.
And it really seemed to be going strong this time, you know, with Oculus and then with PlayStation VR at sort of a more affordable price point. And then you had the Vive as well.
Yeah.
Those are the big three. And then you've got Google Cardboard. Everyone's talking about how VR is the future. And I do think VR
Switch want to do it as well now, don't they, with Labo?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the new Labo
is
a thing you can build to put your Switch in and then do VR.
Yeah.
I think there are very real applications for virtual reality outside of games that we'll see it continue on very strongly. But as for whether it has a real future in games, interest, it seems, is kind of waning.
It's just so difficult to... It's nice to be in a 3D world. It does kind of feel like you're on the holodeck. And you put those goggles on. And if you've never tried VR, it's impossible to really get across like how it feels, I think. You know, people told me, oh, it's great, it feels really real. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, right, okay. And then I put it on, I was like, okay, yeah, no, it really is. And you put these goggles on and suddenly you're in the Batcave, or, you know, you're in like the cockpit of a plane or something. And that's great. The issue, I think, is just always going to come down to the limit on how you can provide input to a game like that. So, you know, sometimes you've got like things in your hands, like Joy-Cons or something like that.
Yeah.
but they don't necessarily emulate like finger movements. And so that's a kind of, mm-hmm. there's a detachment there. And then of course the biggest issue is being able to move around in a VR
yeah.
game.
Yeah.
You know, if you're using thumbsticks to control what feels like your real body, but your legs aren't moving. I mean, I do get motion sick sometimes with video games, with VR games.
Yeah.
And I think until we're somehow able to make it so that you can walk around on the spot using, and you do see these like crazy 360 treadmills that are like probably cost thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
You know, until everyone has access to that kind of thing, we're not going to be able to have the true VR experience. And therefore, it's just always going to be a bit of a fad, I think, until mm-hmm. that's sorted.
Yeah. But it's not all doom and gloom for VR.
No, definitely
the
not.
PlayStation VR, I have one. 3 million of those approximately have sold so far. And then you look at some industry statistics from VentureBeat
mm-hmm.
That report that the VR market saw an 8.2% year-over-year growth in the third quarter of 2018.
Okay.
And the quarter's VR shipment leader was Oculus, which shipped a combined 491,000 units of its Go and Rift headsets, accounting for 25.9% of the entire VR market okay. for that period. So Oculus... practically, I know shipped and sold is very different, but they shifted nearly 500,000 units in just the third quarter of last year. So people are still getting these, and I don't know if it's for games or not, but there's certainly been a massive decline in the amount of YouTube content that you see people playing in
yeah.
VR. There was a period where everyone was doing VR stuff. I don't know if we've talked about it before, but last year when we were working out of the Yogscast offices, the room that we assumed was, and well, for the duration of our time there, it was a little bit hurtful, but it was still called the VR room because they wanted this room that had green walls so that they could go in there and easily shoot VR content.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was used maybe, what, twice?
Yeah.
One of the times by us?
Yeah. And when we used it, it took ages to set. Like, it wasn't, you could tell that it was like not something that was used very often
mm-hmm.
because the setup was like took ages and then wasn't working half the time.
Yeah.
And we had a real, God, that was a really bad sesh, wasn't it?
It
were in
tough.
That room for a long time
the
just
game
trying to get it to work.
Kept crapping out there as well, which is, I suppose, also part of the problem is that it's just a bit too clunky at the moment.
Mm.
The tech is so close, but you know, I tried PlayStation VR and my main issue with it is that it's quite blurry, not
yeah.
because I need glasses, but just because you're so close to it.
Mm.
And the resolution just isn't there. Some games look amazing, while other games look a bit wonkums.
Yeah.
And that's not great. And I thought, well, maybe it's just because it's technically the budget headset out of the big three, costing £229. But then we did that that video last year that I think... was that on the Oculus or the Rift? The Oculus or the Vive?
I think it was Oculus.
So that's £349. And I always assumed, well, maybe the more expensive headsets have clearer displays. It is exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then you've got wires, mm-hmm. you know, trailing behind you as
big
well.
Bricks, like power bricks and things like that.
Sensors all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, for PSVR, it's quite simple in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, still loads of cables there.
Still, yeah, a load of cables. The Vive is £1,119, but that's the starting price for their Pro version, which has a wireless capability.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have wires going around. But then you've got to worry about latency and stuff. And if that thing is even slightly out of whack, you're going to feel so disorientated and unwell.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone because some people feel sick using it.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive. It's clunky. In my opinion, while there are some really good games for it, no one's quite cracked it yet because we're just doing, this is a driving game, but in VR.
Yeah,
Skyrim in VR.
Yeah.
There's going to be something that comes along, I think, at some point that just blows everyone's expectations away of what a VR game is
yeah.
and should be.
I mean, also, yeah, they all just feel quite gimmicky. Like you say, it's a driving game in VR. It's like, okay. I mean, I'll do a couple of races, but I'm not going to want to sink like as many hours into this as like, I mean, I'm not much of a driving game fan, but you know, I'm sure people spend hours and hours and hours playing their driving games just on their sofa with a controller.
Yeah.
Do they really want to sit in the actual car with arguably worse visibility? I know it's more realistic, but you know,
that's why the idea of playing Skyrim in VR I hated it.
Yeah.
And I said as much last year.
30 hours of...
Or a couple of years ago when we made a video about it, and people just destroyed me in the comments because they were like, no. And I had loads of technical issues as well that were not my fault. Like the UI for Skyrim just kept rotating around my body and disappearing. And I like my head was permanently at a right angle in game and I couldn't reset it to face it back. I'd have to quit the game and start it back up. And slowly, if I looked down, I could see it. Slowly, like the compass and the UI rotating around my body again as it was getting confused about where I was. There's so much that needs to be good about it before it can truly be a force to be reckoned with, I think. And it's not like it's not being supported.
No,
because we had
true.
State of Play the other week.
Well, I was about to say, like, I think, you know, on the other hand, while some of these things are gimmicky, they're fun while they last. And you kind of just wonder, can someone just take one of these concepts and just like take it a little bit further? And like a good example of that might be the VR Worlds, the sort of gangster, what was it called, that gangster game?
Yeah, PlayStation VR Worlds, I think it's called The Heist, London Heist
yeah, that's
or something.
It. Yeah, where you play as a gangster in London and you do various things. You do some shooting and I think there's a bit in a car, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that seems to be... Do we know that that's like literally what has inspired this this upcoming?
Yes, it's made by the same. I think it's London Studios or whoever it was that made. Because VR Worlds was like a collection of experiences, and then that was just a part of it. But it was easily the best part of it.
Oh yeah.
And now they're making a full game for it. But that's what we've been needing, I think, a full VR experience, narrative experience from start to finish that you can't get anywhere else. There isn't anything like that. There's brilliant games like Beat Saber, but all of them are sort of games that I feel I would describe them as games that you'd put on to showcase VR, but not something that I would actively go, I'm going to play this all day. There's Super Hot as well, that's supposed to be amazing.
Oh yeah, Super Hot.
That's the one where you fire a, you know, you're in this room being fired at by loads of assailants, and when you move, time moves, but when you stay still, you can't be hit. So you feel like you're in the Matrix because you're able to react in real time to bullets very slowly and then fire back at people.
And then at the end, it plays the whole sequence to you in like real time. So you're just dodging bullets. Yeah.
It's awesome. But it's just, again, it's like, it's almost like a puzzle game. And that's not what I would call a full VR experience.
Well, and again, they've, in a sense, they've kind of tacked on the VR to that, because that's been out on PC for a long time in non-VR form. It's like Keep Talking,
Nobody Explodes.
You know, that's, you know, I'm sure that works pretty good in VR, but I enjoy that game without VR. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, some of these upcoming PlayStation VR games, if any of them kind of just break some new ground.
Yeah,
because that's what it needs. Other than massive tech improvements, it needs someone to really inject like a one-off, like, oh yeah, this game's really good, and you can only play it on PSVR, or you can only play it on Oculus. And
100%.
Yeah.
What I've written here is the tech needs to get cheaper and simpler, and the games need to get better.
Yeah.
And again, that's not to say that, you know, that the price points are absurd, though over a grand is kind of insane.
Yeah, that's
Or that, you know, it's not difficult to set up, or that it is, sorry, difficult to set up at least a PlayStation VR, because that's actually relatively simple. And it's also not to say that the games are bad, because there are some great games out there, but there need to be more. There need to be more exclusive VR games that are just outstanding, and you can't experience them anywhere else, that are built from the ground up for VR and aren't just this game, but in VR.
Exactly.
You've also got to bear in mind as well that all of these require a computer that's able to run them or a PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And, you know, either way, you're looking at spending a lot of money if you need to get both. You can't have one. Well, you can have the console and the PC without the VR. But if you want the VR, you can't not have the thing to run it.
I mean, even the PS4 version comes with a little extra sort of processing
unit.
It?
Yeah.
Because the power console supply. Isn't enough. And power,
I think it's a power supply too. I can't remember.
I think so.
Mine has been in a box under my TV since I moved up to Newcastle at the start of the year. And last year it was in a box for most of the year, apart from when I briefly played Astrobot and Moss, both of which were really good.
Moss looked nice, yeah.
Yeah, it was lovely. But yeah, let us know what you think about VR and how it stands and where it looks to go in the comments below. Obviously, it's technically early days, but do you think you will ever get VR? Do you have VR? What do you make of it? Do you use it? Do you think there's a future for it, or if it is just a fad?
Yeah, you looking forward to any of the games from State of Play, the VR games?
Yeah.
Because I'm interested, mm-hmm. but we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely.
Ben.
Yes.
We have all kinds of social medias, don't we?
We certainly do, Peter.
What are they?
Well, on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, Patreon, and Discord, we are all, whatever their URLs are, .com/Team Triple Jump. Yep. So that's twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. Patreon.com/Team Triple Jump if you'd like to support us monetarily. You get to ask questions for this show and you get Worst Games Ever, which is fortnightly. You get it 2 days earlier than everyone else.
If you're a $5 tier.
Yes, yeah, at a certain tier. If you want to find this podcast on various other audio outlets, you can do play.acast.com/s/Triple Jump. That's where we are hosted, but we're also on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, all sorts of other places as well. So you should be able to find us there. Website, Peter.
Yeah, it's triplej.mup. That's triplju.mp.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go there for various things, but including triplej.mup/shop, where we sell things like these mooges that are visible on the video version of this podcast right now.
Yeah, delicious mooges.
The hoodie that Ben is so beautifully modeling.
There it is.
As well as t-shirts and I think cushions. Mm-hmm. There's a swimsuit somehow.
For some reason.
Still there.
Yeah.
People are buying them apparently. You're mad. So we've got a fairly regular schedule.
We do.
We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, unless mm-hmm. it's April Fool's Day, and then we do one on Monday.
Do one on the Monday, yeah.
We stream every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And on Thursday, we stream together, and we play some fun little multiplayers together. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, mm-hmm. and as Ben said, it's Friday for the patrons, and Sunday for everyone else. So nothing is ever gated, but sometimes it's early if
and
you're a patron.
This week is a Worst Games Ever week.
It is, yeah, because this podcast goes out on Saturday, doesn't it?
It does. So for everybody else who's not a patron, Worst Games Ever tomorrow.
Mm.
Hope you enjoy that.
Yeah. And podcast every Saturday. So mm-hmm. so that's all.
That's all. We're hopefully going to be doing something with Borderlands 1, the remaster, next week.
On Tuesday, we think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. We might be asking for some questions from you guys because we'll have, hopefully, we'll be joined by the lead producer for the remaster and maybe another special guest as well to be confirmed. So if you have any questions about Borderlands 1 and how that's all been put together, keep an eye out for our call to action and we will put that to the man himself.
The actual man from Gearbox. Exciting.
Definitely.
Well, thank you, Ben, for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thank you, me, for joining you today. Oh, my pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Bye.
Happy Sunday and Saturday night.
Yes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.